Hello and welcome to episode 60 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined by Sim Longa. And Sim, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that Purdue basketball starts this month. And the bad news is it was another disappointing outcome at Rossay Stadium this week. Illinois got off to a slow start, but after that slow start, pretty much dominated the game en route to a 43-27 victory. And Sim, it was a pretty disappointing game, all things considered. We thought coming out of the bye week, we'd see kind of more improvement, especially on the defensive side. And it was much the same as what we've seen the past few weeks. But I think really the more disappointing thing was really all facets, offense, special teams, defense, coaching, all had major kind of slip ups and, all had areas of improvement, we'll say, after this weekend.
Yeah, I that's yeah, that's what stuck out to me. We were texting during the game, and then even we were texting during the game, and then you watch Odom's presser, and yeah, it was just all the way around. It was a poor performance. I mean, you can't turn the ball over. You can't be jumping off sides on fourth downs when you're on defense. You can't be giving up big explosive plays. This is the like this as a as a in its totality, this is probably the worst performance we saw out of this Purdue football team this year. And it was really disheartening. I mean, obviously the defense I think is going to wear the lion's share of the blame because they gave up what is like over 500 yards of total offense. They made Luke Altmyer look like he was a first round draft pick. But the offense had its faults, and special teams wasn't particularly great either. So yeah, I just I you know I was annoyed there. I was annoyed in all the group chats, and then to hear Odom kind of express that same frustration. I mean, if there's anything, at least we're all aligned there. We're all aligned in the fact that that performance was unacceptable. And now you're kind of wondering, okay, well, what are you guys going to do, moving forward? Because like you said, we came into that bye week and it was like after the bye week and it was like, well, you had a chance to step back, to reflect, kind of see what make some changes. And it just didn't look that way. It didn't look that way. If anything, it looked worse, which is kind of scary.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the most disappointing thing is, just how kind of almost a, sloppy it was coming out of the bye week. Like you said, you got defenders jumping off sides on fourth down. You have countless drops by wide receivers. You have a muff punt. So I mean, really every area you can look and see kind of some turning points in the game there. And it seemed like, there's never a good time for a drop or a turnover, but it seemed like a few of those drops from the wide receivers. And part of it was on Ryan Brown. Also, like
Yeah,
it kind of goes hand
he
in
wasn't
hand.
very. I say he that wasn't his best game. I mean, if last year the Illinois game was far and away his best game, this was not. This was damn near the opposite of that. He wasn't as sharp himself. So again, yeah, like I just you look all the way around and like everyone has some shit. I don't know. I mean, sorry I cut you off too, but like the biggest thing to me was just. I honestly feel like, and I actually want to know your opinion on this. I actually thought the turning point in the game was when Michael Jackson fumbled and we were up 7-3 because we were driving. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, this is probably 10-3, could be 14-3. And now it's like, okay, cool. You're kind of putting in Illinois in a situation of like, fuck, we have to get going now. And so to turn the ball over, you're taking at least 3 points, in my opinion, off the board. And then the next play, and kudos to Illinois, understanding after a quick change of possession like that, you want to try to strike a big play. I believe two of our guys in the secondary got there was a miscommunication, wide ass open, touchdown. And then from there, it's 10-7. And like you're still in it, but it just the feeling, the like even the energy in the stadium, it was so different after that. Like it was just kind of like, oh shit, we're about to like, we might actually like, could it possibly be some belt ass action? Like, hell yeah. And then all of a sudden those two plays happen and you're like, oh fuck, like now we're in this shit. Like now it's gonna be like, fuck, what's gonna happen from here on out? So yeah, that's
Yeah, I
for me,
think.
that's what I thought was the turning point. What I don't know what you might have thought might have been that point.
I think there was two kind of turning points. That was part one and then part B. And I don't mean to really harp on Michael Jackson, because he did some good things as well. But the second turnover he had when he muffed the punt, really hurt too, because it felt like you were starting to get some momentum. The defense, have finally gotten a stop. I think you were down 10 at that point. And it just felt like you were right there, and needed a play. Defense got the stop, and then you muffed the punt. So I think the two turnovers, to your point, just came at probably the worst times. But then part of that too is that the defense did not help out at all after the turnovers. And I know they were put in some tough spots, but you need some help after plays like that, and you didn't get it. And so, it was just, I think those two plays really hurt, and it's just a combination of things. The jumping off sides on fourth down, I believe, extended a drive where Illinois then went down and scored,
Yeah, it did.
when you were gonna get off the field. So, I mean, a lot of things there, but yeah, I think that early one, because it did feel like Purdue had some momentum going. They looked like they were moving the ball fairly well, and then you have that fumble, and then the one, on the muff punt, kind of almost felt like a knockout blow almost. I know it was still kind of early in the second half, but just felt like it was going to be really tough to overcome anything after that.
Yeah, no, I like you said, I'm not trying to sit here and get on Michael Jackson III, because as we were talking about earlier, like there's blame to go around for everyone, but obviously turnovers are always going to stick out. I think, paramount to even just like drops or penalties and stuff like that, because again, those were immediate instant changes in possession. And the thing too about the fumble. I believe I was reading, I think it was 30-21 when that fumble happened. And we had, obviously you just gotten a stop. So it's like, okay, you get the ball back, you go down, you score. Now it's 30-28. Now you're really in the shit, but I think like the biggest thing for me is that if your defense can't force turnovers, they can't generate turnovers, you're just not in a position to play mistake football on for the other ass, the other ends of the other sides of the ball. So like the offense, like, well, one, defensively, if you can't force turnovers, you damn sure can't be getting like penalties on fourth and two to extend drives. You have to be sure with your tackling. You have to, like, the in terms of the kind of missed assignments, the blown coverages and whatnot, you have to be buttoned up there. You have to be, because if it's like, if I can't get a turnover, well, at least it should be, we stop them, they get a three and out, let's get the three and out, and then whatever, which is what happened actually after the punt, is that, they muff punt, they get the ball back. And the defense held him to a field goal. Like, that's a win, by all accounts. But like you said, it was just, again, it was just the emotion of it, because still, nonetheless, you're looking at 9 versus 12, and now you're really understanding, like, okay, it's have to be two touchdowns. Whereas when you're down 9, you're like, well, shit, a touchdown, another stop, a field goal. Now you're at least in the lead. So yeah, but as long as this team can't generate turnovers on defense, any mistake made by the offense is going to be like that much more amplified. Like, it's just going to be that bigger, because you just know, like, we're probably not going to get that possession back in terms of the defense being able to, hey, nope, we'll get the ball back, we got you straight. And yeah, I mean, I know we've had the conversations about, like, hey, they've been, the defense was playing well despite not having turnovers, but now they're not seemingly playing well and they're not getting turnovers. So yeah, I'm sorry. I
No,
mean,
that's
like,
just what I was
I
gonna say.
I want to tap into the Ben Roberts hopium bucket and say, well, they're due, but I don't
Yeah,
know. I
no.
don't know, man.
If you're not generating turnovers on defense, you can't give up 500 yards,
Right. You can't give
and
up
have
seven
the
plays of over 20 yards. You can't do
yeah.
that shit.
So that's where the issue has kind of lied. And they've also played three really good offenses in the past 3 weeks. So you think you gotta kind of hope that maybe they'll start to, find some level there once they, not play some lesser competition, but these are three really good offenses, but man, they have looked overmatched every time. Luke Altmaier goes 19 of 22 for 390 yards. 19 of 22 for 390 yards. That's just tough. Hank Betty, five catches, 186 yards. And I
Yeah.
think the one thing that really hurts about that is he has over 100 yards yak.
Yeah.
He has more yak yards than any Purdue receiver has. That's
Jesus.
tough. We talk about the defense a lot. The offense struggled too, like we said, with the drops. I thought there was some questionable play calling. I'm gonna beat on the drum every week, but to me, Devin Mockabee needs to have more than 11 carries. Ryan Brown shouldn't throw the ball 50 times. I know part of that was because of the score late, but even early, man, like Mockabee is your best offensive threat, and he has 11 carries and three catches. You gotta get your best offensive player the more than that.
Right.
And it's not like he was struggling. Like 11 carries, 58 yards. He was there, averaging over 5 yards a run. You gotta get him the rock more, man. Like you, especially in a game like this, especially when your defense is struggling. If
You
you
just want
can
to be able to
kind of
control the
try to chew
clock.
up some clock, like
Yeah, man.
I just
Yeah.
I
I don't,
that
yeah,
one
I would've,
doesn't
my
make
bad.
sense to me.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would agree with you, man. Like, I think I actually remember, like, at the game, saying, like, sitting there saying to myself, like, I think he got the ball on a run, and I remember being like, yo, when was the last time he ran the ball? Like, I didn't know, and for a guy who I would argue is probably issue bullet point number one for opposing defenses in terms of, hey, we got to make sure that this guy doesn't get loose. Like it's good to have it. Like the game that Antonio Harris had was great. It's great in terms of complimentary. You need that. But at the end of the day, like Mock's the one who I think, yeah, you have to get the ball in his hands. Even if that's running, if that's, passes out the backfield, like I think like, you need, I feel like like we need to get him established early and then continue, like, and then you get him established early and then you consistently are able, you're maintaining that throughout the game. Yeah, I think this is probably, yeah, this was, again, this was the first game for me where I kind of, where I would definitely notice, like, he's not getting the ball enough and he needs to. It just, yeah, I
And
don't know.
I think we've talked a little bit about it, and I'm all for if you want to give Malachi Singleton some kind of like packages in there, but running him out there for one play where he runs the ball, everybody on in the stadium knows he's gonna run the ball. Like I'm kind of over that too. Like if you're gonna bring him in, make him throw the ball or let him stay out there like a few plays. It always just seems like weird timing whenever he comes out there. It just seems forced almost.
I mean, my biggest issue is just is for me, it's really the situation, and it's the fact that it's usually it's one and done. Like you said, like he comes in and I'm sitting there like, oh, they're gonna run it now. Like they're going to run it. And I think, like, I agree with you, man. I think that you have to have him in there for a few plays. You have to have him in there for let's say it's like if it's first and goal, and let's say the first and goal, they're like the six, and you bring him in then, right? Okay, the first play, you run it. But to me, I'm like, well, you leave him in at least for one more play, because one more play is to possibly throw it. So that way, at least you can, at bare minimum, you have tape on the fact that, like, hey, he's not for sure gonna run it. He might fucking throw this thing. Because as it is now, every time he comes in, if I'm a defense, I'm thinking, oh, okay, so like, lit, watch where he goes, follow him. And that's it's probably up after that. Like he's probably gonna fucking run and take it himself. And I don't like the like that just feels like you're very much so like you're pulling punches, you know, you're telegraphing what you're trying to do. And again, like I don't believe we're in a position to be able to do that. You know, like the really good teams out there, they can sit up there, they can go standard eye and be like, yep, we're gonna run it, do something about it, and they'll be able to do it. I feel like we're at our best when we're running offense, and you know, it's a nice balance between run, pass, RPO, especially too. I would say where Brown is throwing and keeping it. I think that's when we're at our best, and you're having some balance. And if you're gonna put in a different quarterback, you need to maintain that in terms of the play calling. Like sometimes I feel this way. I feel that like teams will put in a quarterback. And they will get conservative with the play calling. And I'm like, no, if you're gonna put him out there, the ex my expectation would be that you expect him to be able to run all of the same shit. Like, and at least at this point, you expect him to be able to make a throw if he had to, or to make a good decision with the ball when running, or you know, if he's gonna pitch or some shit like that. And to bring him in and just have it very much like, yep, he's gonna get the ball and he's gonna fucking run. It's like, all right, well, that seems pretty simple and it's pretty narrow-minded, I feel like, and it doesn't give the defense a lot to think about. So, yeah.
I'm right there with you. I will say, and you kind of talked about it a little bit, but I think one of the bright spots from this game was Antonio Harris. I thought he played really well. He seems to be a really good complement to Maccabee. And kind of more of a home run hitter, whereas Maccabee is just going to run you over. And there's nothing wrong with either style, but they do seem to complement each other pretty well. So I'd be curious to see kind of if you see more of that. But I don't think Purdue is going to win a lot of games where Ryan Brown throws the ball 50 times. And I would think that the staff would probably say that they don't want to do that. And again, probably some of that was game script late, but it seemed like even early on, to your point, I think like Maccabee hit like an 18-yard run on his first run and didn't touch the ball for like two drives after that. And I think we were wondering like, what's going on? Like, did he get hurt when he got hit? Or like, what's happening? But yeah, man, it seems like there wasn't a lot of flow there, which just kind of stunk. Just expected more out of the bye week, but credit to Coach Odom. After the game, he didn't really hide behind anything. He didn't really make a lot of excuses, which other coaches around the Big Ten have made when they lost. Cough, cough, James Franklin. Odom, he wore it, and I'm sure to his point, he's just as upset as we are, probably way more. And doesn't like going to every press conference talking about everything. I can say I probably would not want to be at practice this week.
Oh, I was about to say,
I
I was like,
cannot.
bro, that practice is not, because you know the way he said it in terms of talking about it, even like from the coaches down, it was awful. You know that he got in the coaches' ears of like, hell fucking no. And so off the strength of that, your coach is now gonna get in your fucking ass. And then you know he's sitting there at the top being like, hey, what we did last, hell fucking no, we're not doing that shit again. So yeah, it wouldn't, I wouldn't want to be them. I wouldn't want to be them at all. Because I know he sounded so frustrated. And if you're listening, if you haven't had the chance to see his presser after the game, I highly advise going to check it out, because you can tell from the moment he sits down that he's about to really say some shit. You could sense the frustration, you could see it on his face. And then he goes ahead and he verbalizes it.
One last thing I wanted to touch on before we kind of switch gears and talk about the volleyball team, who, by the way, had an awesome weekend. I wanted to kind of touch base on this, and because it's one of the few things where we kind of disagree a lot on. And I did not agree with it. I think you're on more of Coach Odom's side. But it happened after Purdue scored down 30 to 14, down 16 in the second half, about midway through, and they elected to kick the extra point to go down 9 instead of 8. I don't understand not going for 2 and making it a one possession game. Especially with the defense that we have, and struggling to get stops. And then early in the fourth quarter, you decide to go for 2, you know. So it seemed like it was kind of all over the place. I know on the broadcast, I know you weren't able to hear it, because you were at the game, but on the broadcast, they talked about how Odom said he doesn't like to chase points, but they specifically said he doesn't like to chase points early on. And I don't know, man, that at that point in the game, like if this was like midway through this second quarter, I would understand it more. But 9 minutes left in the third, I don't understand not going for 2 to make it a one possession game there.
How much time do you say was left that happened?
9:01 in the third.
Okay. So the basis of my stance on why I don't chase points early is because with 9 minutes left, me as a coach, what I'm thinking of, because you said it would have been a 2-point conversion to go down 8 instead of 9, right? As a coach, my thought is we're going to score a couple more times between now and the end of the game. So what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to put myself in a position where now I have to start chasing points before I want to. I'm just not a fan of that because I go under the assumption that like, hey, if we just scored and there's 9 minutes left in the third fucking quarter, to me, I'm like, all right, we got 24 minutes more game time. The defense is going to sack they shit up. And then all of a sudden, and then, you know, like the offense, we're going to go down, we're going to score a couple more times and we're not going to need to go for two. That's my thing. Or if we're going for two, it's because hey, we score a touchdown and we'd be up 2 with an extra point. But if we go for 2, then we're up 3, which forces them to have to go for a which forces them to have to go for which means like a field goal just ties you, it doesn't beat you. Like, yeah, that's when I do that shit. But yeah, I know we don't agree.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't have the faith in the defense, especially the way that Illinois was moving the ball there. To think that you're going to get multiple stops as well as go down and score multiple times. It just felt like you needed to make it a one possession game there. I guess we'll never know because that it went to a two or it went to 12 real quick right after that. So, it looked like it might have been the right call because they did get the stop. They might have gone down, and who knows what would have happened. It just seemed interesting that they do that, and then early in the fourth they score and try to go for 2. I get at that point, but at that point, you're down 13 and going for 2, it takes you to 11. So what, then you need 8 and 3. Like, I don't, it just seemed all over the place there. But I see your side. I just, man, make it a one possession game.
No, I mean, like, I'm sure there's people who listen who probably side with you. And it's just like, you, I'm kidding. yeah, I'm just not, just, it for me, it's very much so like time and score. It's very much so time and score for me in terms of like when I would decide to go for two. And I'm just thinking with 9 minutes left in the third quarter, No, I'm not doing that. And I get what you're saying too. You're right in terms of like, well, Illinois is kind of moving on you a certain kind of way. You can't be sure that they're gonna, the defense is gonna be able to get the stops necessary. And then for me, I use a line from the great Ben Roberts. The defense is due. So yeah, actually, I'm gonna go with that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, we'll never know because we didn't get the
In the
opportunity.
grand scheme of things, probably doesn't matter that much, but just thought it was kind of interesting when it happened. And then when we, like I said, we don't disagree that hard on things. So just thought it was interesting there. But yeah, man, a tough loss, but we'll see what happens. I won't say it gets easier, but the schedule lightens up a little bit. And we'll talk about it more kind of when we preview Northwestern, or I'm sorry, Minnesota. But it really almost feels like you're kind of at a crossroads right now, where, are you going to get things back on track and stack a couple of wins here, or are you going to let this three-game losing streak affect you and, let these negative plays keep building and things like that. And I tend to think I have no reason to doubt that they're not going to go on the side of really taking advantage of these next few weeks. I think, they have the right leadership in there, from the staff down. But it really feels like this is kind of at a crossroads here now.
Yeah, no, I think so. I agree. I think that this is a game where the end, like, you really again. Now we're getting to the point where like, just having good effort is not going to be good enough. Like, you kind of need to have good effort materialize into a materialize into a win. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting, man. It'll be interesting. Game under the lights, so you have all week, and like you said, if I'm a player in that Purdue locker room, I'm probably itching to get back out on the field because I'm sure whatever the hell they're getting told in the meetings and film study, there's got to be a hell of a week,
Yeah, I can't imagine this is going to be fun. But we'll talk much more about that in the next episode when we preview the game this weekend in Minnesota. But Sim, let's switch gears and talk about something a lot more fun and exciting. And let's give some credit to the Lady Boilers. The volleyball team went out west. And Sim, last week when we talked, we were like, man, if you could come out like 1-1 out there, I think you would feel good about it. And they heard that and said, all right, we got something for y'all. And a really impressive sweep. And both games were a sweep. Granted, one was a reverse sweep against UCLA. But man, some two really impressive performances. Starting against 24th ranked UCLA, you go out there, you get the reverse sweep, and then you come out and just dominate USC, how they did over the weekend.
Yeah, man. No, they had to have them. They had to have them because, yeah, what transpired with that Illinois game, the Illinois match. You needed to go out and kind of, and like we were talking about too, about this particular stretch of games was going to be important for them. If so, like, yeah, the UCLA game didn't start off great, but they were able to take those, the reverse sweep, one of those last three, and then handling business a couple nights later, against USC. That's really good. It's really good momentum for them to build, and hopefully, obviously, like this week, they have Ohio State, and then they have Nebraska. So hopefully, they are able to take care of business first and foremost at Ohio State, and then we go to the Ben Roberts prediction game against Nebraska. But yeah, just really, really impressed with the ladies with how they were able to respond. You're gonna have letdowns in the conference season. I think that's probably the reality of what transpired against Illinois, but to be able to bounce back, that resiliency to be able to bounce back against UCLA, and then again to consolidate the good vibes out west by beating USC, that was really, really good.
Yeah, just really impressive performances all the way around too. Especially on the defensive side, really did well, and it feels like two big road wins that are really going to help come tournament time as well. And two really impressive resume wins, which we're going to look back on, I feel like, come tournament time, and it'll, might bump them up from, something like a 4 seed up to a 3 seed based off of those wins there.
Yeah, no, these are the wins that they matter. But yeah, going forward, when you're trying to build that resume, I think a good one to build that resume is on Sunday, but I digress.
And then, just want to just give a little shout out to Coach Shondell as well. Like, you look at it, man, and they're 12-2, 3-1 in conference play, ranked number 12th in the country. And with everything that happened in the offseason, all of the roster turnover, and it's just like, ho-hum, we're like right where we thought, right where we're used to being. And credit to this staff and this team, because they really haven't missed a beat at all.
Yeah, it really is. And like, I think that's good that of you to call out Shondell like that, because the expectations were definitely lower going into the year, and now here we are, and it's kind of feeling like, all right, another year where Purdue's, seemingly being part of that top of the class in the Big Ten. Just we got major kudos to Shondell and his entire staff, and the way that these ladies have been able to get these ladies to play together as one, play for each other. I think he's talked about numerous times, and I remember Dustin mentioned it too. Like, these ladies like playing with each other. Like, they're genuinely friends. Yeah, I think it's here. I think you're seeing that in terms of how it's materializing. And so yeah, you just kind of wonder what the ceiling is for this team.
And not only that, they're just really fun to watch too. Just a really good product, entertaining to watch out there. And really encourage anybody that is listening, if you haven't had a chance to watch them, there's a great opportunity on Thursday when they travel to Columbus to take on the Buckeyes. That game will be on FS1. So 7 p.m. start time there. So really no excuse not to watch that one. And then just an absolute travesty that the game on Sunday against number one Nebraska is on Big Ten Plus.
That's
Like,
fucking stupid as
I
shit.
haven't looked. I haven't looked, but I don't know what else could be on Big Ten Network Sunday at one,
That could
that would bump
possibly,
this off.
right.
Just a travesty, but nonetheless, really, like, if you can really encourage anybody to check them out, because it's just really fun product out there as well.
Yeah, no, that's that I was gonna say. I think that's what probably annoys the shit out of me about the Nebraska game, about it not the Nebraska match being on Big Ten Plus. Like, I just get into this whole conversation about in terms of visibility for the sport and trying to gain new viewers. That's a match that people want to watch. They're gonna want to see that shit. And like you said, like the Purdue. I mean, obviously Purdue's been fun to watch, albeit a bit stressful. Like, you're having to do these, reverse sweeps. Like, that shit had me up late too, which I didn't fucking like, but whatever, I digress. But yeah, I mean, you're gonna have a ranked team in Purdue against the number one team in the country, against Nebraska. Yeah, to me, that has to be on Big Ten Network properly. But what do I know? I'm just a regular guy.
Well, we will see what happens. It'll be a really fun game, whether you have Big Ten Plus or not, to just follow along. It seems like a really good measuring stick, to kind of see where the ladies are at. We will talk more about that on our preview episode here, at the end of the week, and we will also talk about the football team as they get ready to travel to Minnesota. Like we said, take on the Golden Gophers under the lights. Have much more on that Want to thank everybody for listening on this one. Kind of felt like a little bit of a vent session. So thanks for letting Sim and I kind of air out some frustrations there. Also appreciate all of the interactions on Twitter and social media there during the game and all throughout the week. Really enjoy all of those. So please keep that up. Thank you for all the positive reviews, all the retweets, reposts, and all of that. But most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.